The Mount of Olives is over here in this area, and Jesus and his disciples were coming from that, and then they went on through the Kidron Valley up here past the Temple Mount, and the area where the upper room was, where the Last Supper was, somewhere over in this area. This is a little bit more than a half a mile from here to here. And so keep this in mind as we go through and we see the journeys of Jesus on that last day, that last night of his, when he was arrested and where they took him. And you think about the fact that he hadn't had a lot of rest, he hadn't had a lot of sleep. And for those of you that will be going there next spring to go through this, you realize that there's a lot of walking in Israel that takes place, and Jesus went through a lot of that. And so we see that there was the argument about what position, who was going to be the greatest. There was a dispute that arose among them as to which of them was going to be the greatest. And the disciples, his apostles, still had not gotten the message about what was going to be taking place and Jesus going to be crucified at this time. And so we see that there was, we ended up with verse 30, that they may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. That there is going to be a reward for those that end up in heaven. There will be a reward there. We don't know exactly what that is, but that there was going to be a reward. Then we go on into verse 31, chapter 22, verse 31. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. Peter said to him, Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. Jesus said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster will not crow this day until you deny three times that you know me. Now we see in that first verse that we have, well, the first verse and the second verse, it says that he might sift you like wheat, but I have prayed for you. Those are actually two different words in the Greek language. If this was written in Southern, if this was Alabama or Mississippian, it would be that I might sift you all like wheat, but I have prayed for all you all that your faith may not fail. And so the first you is a singular, and it's speaking specifically to Peter. The second you is speaking to all of the apostles that are there at this Last Supper. Now, there's one other thing that's a little unusual about Jesus' talking to Peter. And what do you notice here as he is addressing Peter? He's called Simon. Now, why would Jesus have called him Simon? He had been calling him Peter all of this time. Jesus had given Peter the name of Peter, which meant what? What did Peter stand? What did that mean? The rock. The rock. All right. Peter was the rock. And so Simon was his name before Jesus called him Peter. Why would Jesus have called him Simon, Simon at this time? Pardon? Okay, that was his name before, but Jesus had been calling him Peter all of the time until this time. Yes? Okay, the question is, and I usually like to answer a question with a question, because I'm the teacher. I get to ask the questions. But we have the aspect of, was Jesus anticipating that Peter was going to revert back to his previous demeanor, his previous way of functioning that he would be called Simon. Grant. Okay, all right. Yes, I think that this Jesus knows what's going to happen. And so, yes, he is pointing out to the fact that Simon Peter, that he is now going to be reverting back to his previous demeanor, to his earthly or sinful behavior in this time. And, of course, Peter denies this. Peter says, no, absolutely not. I am going to go with you to prison, and I'll go with you to death. But Jesus says, no, you're going to, before the rooster will not crow, you will have denied me three times. Then we see that in verse 35, and he said to them, when I sent you out with no money, bag, or knapsack of sandals, did you lack anything? And they said, nothing. And he said to them, but now let the one who has money bag take it, and likewise a knapsack, and let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one. For I tell you that this scripture must be fulfilled in me, and he was numbered with the transgressors. For what was written about me has its fulfillment. And they said, look, Lord, here are two swords. And he said to them, it is not enough. Okay, first thing we're going to talk about just a little bit is the fact that he is sending them out. What was the situation when Jesus had sent them out earlier, some months earlier than this? Jesus sent his disciples out to minister. What was different about that from this time? I know it was some time ago, and memory gets shorter. Yes. Okay, they were to take nothing. They were to go on out and the people were going to furnish them with things. Here now it says that you're supposed to take your own supplies with you. You're supposed to take your bag, your knapsack, you're supposed to take some money. Now, the part where it says, look, Lord, I have two swords, and he said to them, it is enough. I cannot find any place, and all of the commentators pointed out, we don't know what Jesus meant by this or what Luke meant by this, other than the fact that it wasn't necessary to have two swords. One sword would be good enough. You could sell one, get some money. They were going to need some money. And so they needed to have money for this trip. So now why would they have not needed any supplies when they went out earlier and they would need supplies at this time? Okay, this time they were going to be scattered and not have other believers around them. And so they were going to be pretty much on their own. Okay, where were they at when Jesus sent them out the first time? What general area? They were in Galilee, right. They were around Galilee. They were well known. And what was Jesus' popularity at this time? He was very popular. The crowds were following him. And so they were well known, and so there was not going to be any problem. Now, Jesus is anticipating the crucifixion, and after the crucifixion, so what is the Jews' general attitude going to be toward this Jesus that they thought was going to save them from the Romans? He's gone. He's gone. He's not going to be able to lead us any longer. And so the popularity would have gone down, and so we see that Jesus is anticipating this and is warning them that they're going to have to pay their own way. Any comments or questions on this? Grant. Okay, all right. Okay, all right. that Jesus is saying you don't need even one sword. We don't want to be talking about war and swords and fighting and so on. So that's a possibility that that might be what it's referring to. Okay, all right. In verse 36, it says, but now let the one who has money bag take it, likewise a knapsack, and let the one who has no sword sell his cloak and buy one. So, you know, it seems that Jesus is saying, you're going to need to have some armor. You're going to have some means of protection. You don't need to have two. All right. You don't need to be double-fisted and so on. Have you ever seen my quick draw? You want to see it again? Anyway, Jesus knew that this was going to be different than when they had gone out before. And they were going to have to be prepared for that. So now Jesus is leaving the upper room, this area here, and he is now heading on back to the Mount of Olives. Now Judas most likely left. We talked about this fact that they had the bread and the wine. This was ceremonial, and then they had the Passover lamb that they ate that afterwards. And it's very possible that Judas left after the bread and the wine, because Jesus said, you are the one that's dipped in here, in this basket is going to be betraying me. And so we know that Judas was there at that time, but then he probably left. And when he left, he went to tell the Roman soldiers. Now we have an area up here. This is the Temple Mount, about 37 acres, pretty good size. And on the north part of this, we have the, is that the north part? Yeah. The north part of this, we have the Antonio. This was the fortress where the Romans had their soldiers. And the soldiers were there because the Jews kept rumbling and the Jews kept doing things that made Herod rather uneasy, Pilate uneasy, and so he had to have somebody there to kind of slow things down on a regular basis. And so anyway, Judas probably went from the upper room over here to the Fort Antonio to tell the soldiers that Jesus was now leaving the upper room, or we don't know whether he knew that or not, or whether he told the soldiers to come back here. We're not sure what transpired there, but we know that Judas now contacted the soldiers. Jesus, meanwhile, left the upper room, and he went across the city of Jerusalem, down here past the old city of Jerusalem, through the Kidron Valley. Now, the Kidron Valley is... that's the wrong way. Here's a picture of the Kidron Valley. The upper room would have been over in here someplace. They went on across, down through the Kidron Valley, down along this, and this grove of trees is where the Garden of Gethsemane is located. Now, they say that this valley is about 700 feet less deep now than it was during Jesus' time. Now, remember, during that time, when they destroyed a city, they didn't carry the junk away. They just pushed it down and built over the top of it. And so this is why when they go through and they are now doing their archaeological work, they just keep on going through, and they go through from one city to the previous city to the previous city. Well, here the Temple Mount was over in this area, and this was destroyed in 70 AD. That was all pushed down here, so Jesus' path through this would have been through much deeper valley than what we would go through today. And that's still a pretty good hike down on there, but then it's more of a hike coming back up. So, kind of like the Grand Canyon, you know, you every foot down is 10 feet back up. So, Jesus now taking the disciples, and they're going on over here to the Garden of Gethsemane. Now, during this time, we have other things that Luke doesn't mention. John 17. Anybody remember what John 17, what the general gist of John 17 is? Or go ahead and take a quick look at John 17. What is John 17? Okay, John 17 is what I like to call the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer. This is the prayer for His disciples. And you know that as Jesus is going through this, He is in agony, He is in distress, humanly in distress for His followers, so on. So anyway, I think that this is the time where Jesus is praying for the disciples. As He is walking from this area, as He's walking from this area where the upper room was with the disciples on down here, whether He stopped and prayed or whether He was praying while He was walking with the disciples, but I think this is the time when John chapter 17 occurred as He went on down. And so we see that verse 39, and He came out and went, as was His custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed Him. And when He came to the place, He said to them, pray that you may not enter into temptation. Okay, we see that it says that He was, as was His custom, He went to the Mount of Olives. Okay, the Mount of Olives was over in this area here. And the Garden of Gethsemane is right at the foot of the Mount of Olives. And Jesus was very familiar with this. Also in John, it speaks about the fact that Judas was familiar with this, that Jesus would stay at this area in Gethsemane. And so Jesus was going on through the Kidron Valley, and we go to the Garden of Gethsemane. These are olive trees in the Garden of Gethsemane. They don't know exactly how old these olive trees are, but it's very possible that these olive trees are 2,000 years old. And so these trees could have been there when Jesus was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. This is very possible. Olive trees live to be very old. So we have this garden that was there. And again, there were farmers that were in the area at the base of Mount Olives that would have these olive groves. This is their occupation, growing the olive trees. And Jesus knew these individuals, and Jesus would stay at some of these individual places. And so we have the Garden of Gethsemane, and then at the Garden of Gethsemane, right at the base of this, there is a cave. And it's a fairly good-sized cave, a little bigger than this fellowship room that we have here. And this is very possible that this is where Jesus and His disciples would sleep if they did not want to go back to Mary and Martha's house, which was about 3 miles over Mount of Olives, and over onto the other side to Bethany. So it's very possible that they could have stayed here. This has been converted into a Catholic chapel, and they do have services there on a fairly regular basis, but you can go on in there and see this place, and it's very possible that this is where Jesus went when He went from the upper room to the Mount of Olives. Then He says, when in verse 40, and He came to the place, He said to them, pray that you may not enter into temptation. And He withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Now, why would Jesus have prayed this? Okay, all right. Remember, Jesus, while He was here on earth, was fully God. But Jesus, while He was here on earth, was fully man. I can't understand this. I don't think any of you can understand this either. But this is what the Bible tells us, that He was fully God and He was fully man. And as He was fully man, this was something that He knew was coming, and this was agonizing to think about this. Death on a cross was one of the most cruel ways of dying that the Romans could think of. The Romans used death on a cross as a means to prevent crime. They wanted people to see this and see, yeah, if you mess up, this is what's going to happen to you. And you do not get just black and white TV in your cell instead of color TV. This is something that's horrible. And so, Jesus, as being fully man, He was asking whether it's possible for Him not to have to do this. Grant, question. All right. Yeah, He understood the burden or the agony that there would be with Him bearing the sins of all mankind. Not only of all mankind from the beginning of creation to this time, but from this time for as long as this earth is going to last. And so he understood this as God, and this is why He would pray this: nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Then we have verses 43 and 44. And there appeared to Him an angel from heaven, strengthening Him. And being in an agony, He prayed more earnestly, and His sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Now, if you have some of your Bibles, may have a little notation here saying that these two verses don't seem to be in some of the old manuscripts. And so those two verses, we're not sure that Luke actually wrote those, that they could have been added afterwards. Now, I saw one commentary that says, for some believers who have been raised on the King James Version of the Bible, in speaking of omitting certain verses from the Bible seems heretical. And the warning of Revelation 22:19 comes to mind. What is at issue here, however, is not omitting something from the sacred text, but rather not allowing something that was never in the sacred text to be added to it. It is just as wrong to add something to the Scriptures as it is to take away something from them. When we therefore speak of omitting Luke 22:43 and 44 from the text, we mean that we should not include what some later scribe added to the original gospel penned by the evangelist Luke. So it's possible that those two verses were not part of the original autographa. However, what difference does it make? It doesn't change a thing. Now, what about angel ministering to Jesus? Do we have any other incident of that? Okay, in the wilderness when He was tempted, an angel ministered to Him at that time also. And so, it doesn't change anything as far as our Scripture is concerned, whether that was part of the original autographer or not. It says, and when He arose from prayer, He came to the disciples and found them sleeping for sorrow. And He said to them, why are you sleeping? Rise and pray that you may not enter into temptation. So, what were the things that were included in Jesus' prayer that He had here at this time? Okay, He expressed the agony that He was going through. He expressed this part of being man, being fully man, and He expressed that. What other things do we see there? Doug? Okay, that thy will may be done. So he was just reaching for his coffee. I thought he was answering. Don't go to an auction sale, Doug.
Right, yeah.
You just bought something. Okay, so we see that he prayed that this cup could be taken from him. But he prayed that God's will would be done. What other thing did he pray for? That should be very much of a comfort to you and me. Pray that you may not enter into temptation. He was praying for his disciples. He was praying for his apostles. And he continued on here with the prayer that we have, which is John 17, which I think he prayed as he was walking on down to the area of the Garden of Gethsemane. So we now go on down to the, and Luke does not give us the detail about this, but Jesus actually woke up the disciples. He went and prayed, hoping that they would be praying for him. They went to sleep again. He went back again, and so he went back and forth several times. Luke does not record those things for us. So there was more than one time that Jesus was praying here. Then we said, while he was still speaking, there came a crowd. The man called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. Luke is being very definite, talking about the fact that we know who this Judas was. Judas was a fairly common name. And so they want to know that this was the Judas that had been with Jesus for these better than 2 years. And he drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Judas said to him, Judas, would you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? And when those who were around him saw what would follow, they said, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus said no more of this, and he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said to the chief priests and officers of the temple and elders who had come out against him, have you come out with us against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you day after day in the temple, you did not lay hands on me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. So we are probably outside of this cave now, or in the Garden of Gethsemane, this olive grove, and Judas now comes with this group of soldiers. And we're not sure where he came from, whether Judas had gone up here to the Fort Antonio and brought the soldiers on down to see Jesus here, and Jesus left. And if that's the case, Judas knew exactly where Jesus would have gone. He was not wandering around the city of Jerusalem trying to find Jesus. He knew that Jesus would have gone back here. So whether they went directly from Fort Antonio down here to the Garden of Gethsemane, or whether they went here and then back, we're not sure. There was enough time that would have elapsed. They could have certainly gone to the upper room and then have gone to the Garden of Gethsemane. So we now see that Judas brought the individuals here, along with there was a crowd of individuals that was following them. Now, Jesus knows that Judas is going to betray him, because he pointed this out at the Last Supper. And now we see that the disciples are asking if they should fight. So now we have 12 individuals, 11 apostles plus Jesus who are there, and they are asking, should they fight against this army? We're not certain how big this army was. It's very possible that this could have been led by a centurion, which means it would have been about 100 soldiers. And so there could have been 100 soldiers that were coming to arrest this individual. Oh, Luke points out one thing that is rather interesting. This is the only time that it is mentioned in the scriptures. And you would expect this from Luke. See, what was Luke's occupation before he started following Jesus? He was a doctor. All right, so what does Luke point out here? Jesus healed the guy. All right, so Luke points this out. The other writers of the Gospels don't point this out, but Luke points this out that Jesus healed this individual. And Jesus also said, no more of this. Now the question is, was Peter, and it also, this, it was Peter, Luke does not mention this, but other Gospels mention it, that Peter was the individual. And you would expect Peter to do this. He was the impetuous guy, and so he was going to respond. He was going to jump right in. And so we don't know whether he was going to, you know, try and split the guy's head in two, and the guy ducked, and he just got that, or whether he was going to sever his head, and the guy went like this, and he just glanced off. We don't know what happened there, but he cut off an ear. And Jesus then healed it and told Peter, no, this is not the way that this is going to be handled. Now, the reason that Jesus knew this, or Jesus said this, is again because Jesus was fully God. He knew that what was going to happen had to take place. He had to be crucified on the cross. This had been prophesied in the Old Testament, and that he was going to have to die for the sins of all mankind. So he points out here that have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? So what is Jesus telling the individuals here with these last two verses, verses 52 and 53? What is he pointing out to the individuals? Okay, all you had to do was say something. And where had Jesus been for the last week? He had been right out in the public. Now, if you have done something that you needed to be arrested for, and, you know, I don't know if I should ask any of you from personal experience, but if you had done something that you should be arrested for, would you stay out in public? Would you be in with people? You'd probably try and hide. Mexico or Canada would be good places. But anyway, Jesus is saying, you could have picked me up while I was teaching in the temple. I was there. There's no reason why you have to come with a squadron of soldiers to try and pick me up. So they come on, and then they do take a hold of him. In verse 54, then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house, and Peter was following at a distance. Now, John was also following at a distance. At least we are reasonably certain it was John, because in John's Gospel he mentions that Peter followed him and another disciple. And John never mentions himself. He never identifies himself in his book. But it was most likely John that also followed here. And so they followed, and they went on up, and it says they went to the middle of the courtyard and sat down together. So we have been picked up now here in the Garden of Gethsemane, and so we're making this trip back through the Kidron Valley, back on over here, and in about this area is where the high priest's house was, one of these places. Again, it was the high point of Jerusalem, so that they didn't have to go down through the Hinnom Valley to get to the temple, but we had Caiaphas and Annas that were the high priests at this time. Now, Annas had been the high priest. He had been the high priest for quite a few years. He was a Sadducee. He was in cahoots with the Romans, and he was trying to keep the Jews under control from the Jewish standpoint. Pilate was trying to keep the Jews under control from the Roman standpoint. But anyway, Annas had been part of the high priestly order, and he then passed it on to Caiaphas, who was his son-in-law. And so there was probably a little bit of politics that was going on here. And so now Caiaphas was the high priest. It doesn't tell us any place whether they were at Caiaphas' house or Annas' house where they went to. It was probably Annas' house because Annas had been the high priest for a long time and he had made considerable amount of money off of this position. And it talks about the fact that there was a courtyard. They had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together. And the average Jewish citizen did not have a house that was big enough to warrant a courtyard in an area where people could come on in. So it's very possible that this was Annas' house and Caiaphas was also in there. So we see that they ended up in this house. And it says then, when they seized, Peter sat down among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the light and looking closely at him, said, "This man also was with him." But he denied it, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." And a little later, someone else saw him and said, "You also are one of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." And after an interval of about an hour, still another insisted, saying, "Certainly this man also was with him, for he too is a Galilean." All right, it was possible to tell the difference between people from Galilee and people from Judea by their accent, just the same way as you can tell if somebody is from Mississippi or from Minnesota. And so there were different accents there. But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you are talking about." And immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the saying of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly. And the "he" here is speaking about Peter. So you can just imagine what Peter felt like after. He had been so adamant that he would not let Jesus, he would continue to follow Jesus. He would not forsake Jesus. And Jesus said, "No, when a rooster crows, you're going to have denied me three times." And so we see that there were three separate times where somebody so recognized Peter. And the last individual, and Luke doesn't point this out, but the last individual knew that Peter was the guy that took the swipe at Malchus's ear. And so he was able to identify, "No, you're the guy that tried to decapitate one of the soldiers. I know that you were with Jesus." And so we have this situation of Peter's complete remorse after this had happened. Now when the men who were holding Jesus in custody were mocking him as they beat him, they also blindfolded him and kept asking him, "Prophecy, who is it that struck you?" And they said many other things against him, blaspheming him. Now, one of the things that happened here is that Jesus was actually tried at Annas' house, or by Annas. Annas had been the high priest earlier. This was simply a muckraking trial. They just wanted to find out if they could find out something against Jesus that they could use in their trial. And so now there were two things that they were working on. One is that the Romans were looking for what? What was the sedition that the Romans were looking for if they were going to put Jesus to death? What was the situation that they were looking for? Yes. Okay, treason against Caesar. Or was Jesus going to try to be the king that was going to take over? So this is what the Romans were looking for. What did the Jews have against Jesus? What were they looking for? Pardon? Okay? And so we see that they were blasphemy against that he was also God. And that Jesus was claiming that he was God, and so the Jews, the Sadducees, the Pharisees, they were looking to convict Jesus of this. And so they have two different things that they are working on. So they had this original trial with Caiaphas, then they went, with Annas, then they went to Caiaphas' house. And Caiaphas was the reigning high priest at this time. So now they are with him, and at this point, this is where they were now, the men were holding Jesus in custody and were mocking him. And what they did is that they put on some of the, probably the robes, the worn-out robes that Caiaphas and Annas no longer used, and put these on Jesus. They blindfolded him, and if he was God, if he was claiming that he was God, as the Jews were saying, they were saying, you ought to know who is hitting you. And so this is a kind of a Marco Polo game that they're playing here with Jesus. They're striking him and saying, who hit you now? Somebody else would hit him. Who hit you now? And so they were mocking him. They were mocking him that he was God and blaspheming him. When the day came, the assembly of the elders of the people gathered together, both chief priests and scribes, and they led him away to their council. And they said, if you are Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. So this is significant when it says when the day came. A trial at night was totally illegal as far as the Jews were concerned. They had to have their trials during the daytime. And so these two trials, which they already had, one before Annas, one before Caiaphas, were totally illegal. They were illegal from other standpoints also. And so now when day came, as soon as daybreak came, now they took him to an official place, and we're not sure where this official place is, but it could be that it is still somewhere in the area of Caiaphas and Annas' house, that they took him to a place and they now had this trial. If you are the Christ, tell us. But he said, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you, you will not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man shall be seated at the right hand of the power of God. And they all said, are you the Son of God then? And he said to them, you say that I am. Then they said, what further testimony do we need? We have heard it ourselves from his own lips. So Jesus at this time said, it doesn't make any difference if I answer you. You're not going to believe the answer anyway. And so he refused to answer them. And by the answer which he gave, they knew that he was claiming to be the Son of God. If he would have denied it, I mean, if he was not the Son of God, he would have probably denied it. It's kind of like when you have asked one of your children if they know something about something that has happened in the house, and they are quick to answer, you know that they're probably telling the truth. But if they're not going to answer right away, so on, you know that there's something going on. And that's the way the Jewish leaders were reading Jesus' answer here. Any comments or questions as we close? Yes, Doug.
I just think that, when they asked him if he was the Son of God, your version, what did your Bible say?
Okay, if I tell you, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I ask you, you will not answer. Okay, are you the Son of God then? And he said to them, you say that I am.
Yeah, and I'm using the NIV, and their translation here is, when he
replies, he
says, you are right in saying
I am. Okay. So I'm wondering if that's really the translation of those words. And, that seems a little bit ambiguous in a way. Right.
Yeah, you're right in saying that.
Okay. And again, by the way that he did not answer was his answer. Okay, any other comments or questions? Yes, Dan. Okay. Yes, it was his timing, but with his timing also, he is pointing out to them, you know, you could have picked me up any time that I was there, but this is my timing, this is when I'm going to be crucified. Yes. Okay, all right.
I think that really
okay, and Jason is frantically pointing to the clock, and so we need to dismiss at this time. We'll continue on next Sunday. Thank you.